Yeah, I used to laugh when the plaintiff would call my doctor adversely, thinking, oh, don't throw me in that briar patch, because I was thinking you just ceded the territory advantage. And now the story is going to get told, my story is going to get told a lot earlier. And even the worst witness, I mean, let's face it, even a broken clock's right twice a day. I was going to have to put that witness on anyway. Now I can do it early before there's a cumulative negative effect from the plaintiff's experts. The point that Frank makes that I think is incredibly powerful is now we can harness technology. Video clips and key depositions, I really recommend videotaping, because people who are not careful about prepping witnesses will have, and I see this a lot, you probably do with hospitals, nurses who show up looking like they're homeless. They've worked all night the night before. They're tired. They're scruffy and wrinkled and kind of dirty. They don't look like somebody you'd let be a vet tech, much less a person. And then suddenly Florence Nightingale shows up at trial looking pristine. And I think there's a lot of power in contrasting the unprepared versus the carefully curated. Don't forget, too, that I think video clip admissions by a defendant, for example, can be used as the predicate for your expert. So do you start with your expert and get the benefit of those video clips from the deposition as part of the factual predicate for their opinion? You know, Dr. So-and-so, expert, I'd like you to assume that this was the testimony of the defendant doctor. Play the clip. Damning admission. Now tell the jury what you think about that. And I think it's a really effective strategy.
I agree. One other thing. I tried a case once in Lufkin years ago, and I'd settled with the hospital already. It was a bad baby case. And the defendant came forward with a good expert, a local OBGYN, who was hard to handle. But in her deposition, I got maybe 30, 45 minutes worth of really good admissions. And so in the case, the defense lawyer put the witness on, and the judge has a lot of a lot of discretion under 611 and the rules around it in how they allow a witness to testify. This was a long trial, and the judge wanted to shorten it. So I told the judge I would only ask 45 minutes worth of questions if he would let me play those 45 minutes with the witness sitting on the witness stand so that the defense could ask him questions afterward. And he did. And that, I thought, was the strongest part of the trial, because I had orchestrated, I knew where it was going to be, I knew what she was going to say, and there wasn't much redirect left for him.
Frank, I've seen you do it, and your opponents have seen you do it. I know there's going to be people sitting out here who say to themselves, how in the world can I get an opposing expert or an opposing witness to concede things that hurt that witness? You seem to go where others don't go in that regard. What advice would you give to people out there if they're drawing up their cross-examinations and they're thinking about trying to extract concessions from opposing witnesses, opposing experts, and they're just not sure they can do it, and they're not sure the witness is going to go there? What advice would you give?
I don't think you can make an outline that will get you there. I mean, getting a witness to admit that they or their fellow defendant were grossly negligent is a matter of feel. As you get into the deposition, if you watch the deposition, the deponent's eyes, if you watch their body language, there is a point in time in which some witnesses just kind of yield, that maybe they've been hurt on a prior answer where they didn't tell you the truth. Maybe they're just frightened. Or maybe what you're saying makes sense to them. And if you can get, you have to feel it. And you can feel it in a deposition. Anybody here ride a horse? I'm not much of a horseman, but I grew up in a part of Fort Worth where there were people that did rodeos. And if you can, you ride a horse mostly with your knees. And witnesses are a matter of feel and subtle movements like that. And at the right time, a witness who was totally adverse going in, if you ask the right question, will give you the answer. I tried a railroad case a few years ago in federal court in Marshall and got a really nice recovery for it. And after it got out of the Fifth Circuit, I ran in to the judge, and it was a case where both the railroad and us waived a jury and tried it to the judge. And I didn't know the judge, and I ran into him a year or two later at a seminar, and he said, "How did you get two vice principals of the railroad in that case to admit gross negligence?" I said, "Well, Judge, number one, you were sitting about 3 feet from them, looking right down their throat, and it was the truth. And the pictures that we'd just shown them on those big boards said if they said to you that it wasn't gross negligence under that definition, you weren't going to believe a thing else they said." And that's part of it. When you can get the question so there's only one answer that anybody in the audience is going to believe, you're swimming downstream at that point.
What advice would you give, Liz? And then we'll take questions if Shane has them.